The circuit-riding preacher used to ride across the land with a rifle on his saddle and a Bible in his hand. He told the prairie people all about the promised land as he went riding, singing down the trail.
Arise and thresh, daughter of Zion, thou shalt beat in pieces many people. Yes, more Arab nations have declared war on Israel this week, and open war in the Middle East is only getting hotter. In Panama, the critical canal in the wasp waste of the Americas has protests so bad, some are fearing a government collapse. Tonight's Latin America War Report and Migrant Invasion News will focus on the nation of Panama and the brewing instability in the two nations above it and the two nations below it. For example, Venezuela is talking seriously about invading their neighbor, taking militarily the region known as the Essequibo, which lies in neighbors Guyana and Suriname. Colombia's communist president Petro has been most bellicose against Israel, even as the instability under his communist government has worsened, and guerrillas even farther left than he have taken the most famous hostage in recent memory. We spoke last week about the Himalayan roof of the world, where China, Pakistan, and India share an icy alpine border. This week there was a terrible earthquake there with over 100 dead. It's been reported as high as 6.4 on the Richter scale. It occurred west of Kathmandu and was felt as far away as India's capital and New Delhi. We're going to open the show with Kathmandu by Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band. This is the Living by the Sword radio show with Pastor Sam and the Gospel Gunslingers.
The West Coast, Warner Brothers are such good hosts. I raise my whiskey glass and give them a toast. I'm sure they know it's true. I got no rap against the Southern states. Every time I've been there, it's been great. But now I'm leaving and I can't be late. And to myself, be true.
Get out! Oh, I know I'll miss the USA. I know I'll miss it every single day.
Thank you, Bob Seger, for the God's honest truth. We broadcast Living by the Sword from cartel country, from exile. I do not cross the Rio Grande, and that causes a lot of problems for me, and there's a ton of things that I miss. Let's jump right into Pastor Sam's Latin America War Report and Migrant Invasion News, focused on Panama, really the heart of the Americas, or perhaps at the Achilles heel. Investigative reporter and war correspondent Michael Yan told me that in addition to the 5,000 or so migrants coming across the Darien Gap every day, just pouring into and through Little Panama, changing the entire demographics of the nation and the economy of the nation, he told me that aside from that, there were protests against the government by Panamanians. He said ostensibly it's about a mine, but he said it looks to me, and this is a guy who's been all over the world as conflicts are precipitating and can feel the electricity in the air when a war is about to pop or a nation's about to collapse, he said to me, I think it's much bigger than that, and I'm concerned that either the president will resign or flee the country or the government will collapse. Well, here is what's going on. There's a point in the decline of every free society where the people realize that their government does not represent them anymore, that it is out of touch with them, that it does not follow their directives, and that their grievances are not heard. That there certainly is no redress of grievances, to use the language of the U.S. Founding Fathers. It could be something as innocent as a soccer mom who's marginally involved in politics standing up in a school board meeting and realize that she's under surveillance and persecution by the FBI at the federal level. It could also be stunning and traumatic, like my cousin who went off to college, made a best friend there in her girls' dormitory, and 6 weeks into the school year, her best friend is shot in the head by a mugger. Not long after that, she got shaken down by the police while snacking outside of the convenience store. She was detained, thoroughly searched, touched over every inch of her body by huge, bald, porcine police officers. This is how, in the life of a person or a nation, and sometimes over a relatively minor issue, the realization is made that the government no longer serves the people, no longer protects the people, and has in fact become predatory and parasitic. In Panama, the concern is that the nation has been completely sold out to China. The issue that has revealed this in the popular mindset is the Quantum Strip mine, which at least on paper is 18% owned by the Chinese government. A good part of the remaining 82% is held by Canada, which is considered by many a Chinese proxy. The central issue is that the mining concession has been declared not only to be illegal, but unconstitutional. The open pit is an eyesore, and not only that, new legislation would prohibit even civilian overflights of the mine area. The nation of Panama is smaller than the U.S. state of Indiana, the smallest of Midwestern states, and is covered with very fragile and biodiverse rainforest. Mining can be done responsibly, yet it is a notorious consumer of water resources and polluter of waterways. Totally aside from the quantum mine, water resources in Panama have been a critical issue, which in recent months has both restricted and entirely closed the Panama Canal to ship traffic. Panamanians believe there are far more Chinese nationals, both in the nation as a whole and working at the closed property of the quantum mine, than allowed by treaty or law. The Panamanians then are thinking down the same lines of many within the United States who see the Chinese come into our nation unvetted, buy up vast tracts of land, often near U.S. military bases. And while it's true some bills have been brought to Capitol Hill to begin to prevent this, nevertheless, it is happening. We can't get rid of these people. We can't stop them from coming in, and we can't go into these zones, which are closed to the public and even to law enforcement, like the barbed wire fortified gates of the quantum mine. In that case, behind the barbed wire are fully outfitted jackboots with riot shields and batons. The Panamanians want to know if those men are foreigners, if they are soldiers with the Chinese People's Liberation Army. So yes, Michael Yan's spidey sense is in fact correct. There's much more going on than a typical environmentalist protest. Even though as a whole the nation likes the center-left president Nito Cortizo that they elected, there is broad concern within the nation that he and the government itself is no longer sovereign, but has been subjugated and subjugated by Red China. Aside from the Panama Canal being the Achilles heel both economically and militarily, of North America. It is also the keystone of China's eastbound Belt and Road Initiative for trade to Europe. Former Southcom commander Admiral Craig Faller stated that one of his central duties was the defense of the Panama Canal. He thus made it very clear that in between the counter-drug operations in the Caribbean and Pacific and all the humanitarian assistance and natural disaster cleanup, that the security of the Panama Canal zone was a central focus, if not the central focus, of all of his diplomatic visits and joint military exercises with all the nations of Central America, the Caribbean, South America, all the way down to the Drake Passage and the Antarctic Peninsula. Admiral Faller drilled with the British and Dutch navies as their warships made port calls on their Caribbean territories and protectorates. Together, they made massive seizures in combined arms counter-narcotics operations. Thus, Admiral Faller built relationships even with European powers that could be called on for the security of the Panama Canal in the event of global war. The Biden administration replaced Admiral Craig Faller with Air Force General Laura J. Richardson, who seems a capable replacement but has not been nearly as outspoken about this central duty, the securement of the Panama Canal Zone. I would like to hear General Richardson speak clearly about the security of the Panama Canal, both by land and by sea, because as we get into the unrest in Venezuela and in Colombia, that is the very venom that's pouring into the Panama Canal Zone by land, an attack that was completely unforeseeable to prior generations. In World War II, the sea lane approaches to the Panama Canal were guarded not only by ships and mines, but by sentinel shore and island gun batteries. Many of those batteries mounted mammoth 16-inch caliber battleship guns, the largest ever forged on the American continent. They were designed for the Iowa-class battleships, the largest ever built. Only four such ships were ever put to sea. But many extra barrels were forged. They could be bought for surplus after the war and were used for different projects like artillery genius Gerald Bull, who built a space gun that would literally fire satellites into orbit. It was made of two 16-inch gun barrels welded end-to-end and mounted at his base in Canada. In the end, Gerald Bull was assassinated, allegedly by the Mossad, for his assistance to the Iraqi artillery program under Saddam Hussein. Any visitor to Panama today can opt to view the ruined concrete revetments that once mounted those monstrous cannons, defending the canal approaches against any invading dreadnoughts. Today, the invaders pour in, not by sea, but rather by land on their own 2 feet, into pre-established bases on the American continent, the largest of which may very well be the Quantum Mine of Panama. The Canal Zone reminds me of a Bob Seger tune where he reminisces on the strength that he used to have. In a bygone day, nobody could ever get to him. He was strong as he could be. He was like a rock.
Stood there boldly, sweating in the sun. Felt like a million, felt like number one. The height of summer, I'd never felt that strong. Like a rock. I was 18, didn't have a care. Working for peanuts, not a dime to spare. But I was leaning solid everywhere, like a rock. My hands were steady, my eyes were clear and bright. My walk had purpose, my steps were quick and light. And I held firm to what I felt was right, like a rock, like a rock. I was strong as I could be, like a rock. Nothing ever got to me, like a rock. I was something to see, like a rock. Stood arrow straight, unencumbered by the weight of all these hustlers and their schemes. 20 years now. Where'd they go? 20 years, I don't know. I sit and I wonder sometimes where they've gone. And sometimes late at night, oh, when I'm bathed in the firelight, the moon comes calling a ghostly way, and I recall like a rock, standing arrow straight, like a rock, charging from the gate, like a rock, carrying the weight, like a rock, oh, like a rock, the sun upon my skin, like a rock, hard against the wind, like a rock, I see myself again.
Panama Canal Zone was personally reconnoitered by Hezbollah agent El Debek, a deep cover agent for the secretive Iranian-backed sleeper cell organization known as Unit 910 or Unit 910. Apprehensions at the U.S. southern border are breaking all the records in 2023, especially as pertains to persons from known hostile Islamic countries and persons on the U.S. terror watch list, hailing from Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, Iran, Iraq, Yemen, and heavily Islamic Indonesia. Concerns are rising about a fifth column within the USA, about an Al-Aqsa flood mission within the USA. There's always been concern about lone wolf attacks or operations by isolated cells, but now there is talk of a real guerrilla insurrection, a Tet Offensive-style coordinated uprising amongst fifth columnists and sleeper cells such as Unit 910. Reading from ToddBensman.com, Unit 910 is described as a, quote, a highly compartmentalized component of Hezbollah responsible for the planning, preparation, and execution of intelligence, counterintelligence, and terrorist activities outside of Lebanon, end quote. The article tells of the first operation by American operative El Debek, who was sent to Muslim areas of East Asia, and then comes the paragraph, the Panama missions, quote, irrigate the land with blood. Let's read about the mission of El Debek to the Achilles heel of the Americas. He used his U.S. passport to fly directly from Lebanon to Colombia and then to Panama. His assignment was to figure out how to open a business in Panama and also to locate the U.S. and Israeli embassies in the Panama Canal. He told the FBI he was instructed to, quote, case and identify security procedures at the canal and the Israeli embassy. El Debek, meanwhile, continued taking Spanish lessons while in Panama. While in Panama City, he located hardware stores that sold bomb-making precursors like acetone and battery acid. Hezbollah wanted him to identify areas of weakness in construction at the canal and provide information about canal security and how close someone could get to a ship. To accomplish this, it appears El-Debek took a pirate trail and Panama Canal tour and inquired about a birdwatching tour in Soberania Park, which is adjacent to the Panama Canal. He took a lot of photographs and later got them to Unit 910 in Lebanon. Presumably, Hezbollah still has this material. Of the U.S. Embassy in Panama, the article states that El-Debek did spend time taking notes about the embassy and provided details about its security. His Unit 910 handlers were particularly interested in periods of heavy traffic into and out of the embassy, vehicular traffic patterns in front of it, and the locations of houses and apartments in close proximity. El-Debek made a point to mention to his handlers that he believed people waiting for their visa appointments waited outside the embassy. After about a month, El-Debek flew directly to Lebanon and provided everything to his handler. I have to state that as the whole world is talking about this unit of Iranian-backed sleeper cells as pertains to Jerusalem and the war with Israel and the Middle East, that they are in the Americas. They have conducted very destructive attacks in the Americas, and they have thoroughly cased the Panama Canal. We're going to talk more about their involvement in Venezuela. But just so you know that this is all through the Americas, to include touching the presidencies, I'm going to read from stop910.com. One of the large terror attacks for which Hamia was responsible, that is an operative of Unit 910, was the attack in Buenos Aires in 1992. Hamia, known for his close connections with Iranian intelligence elements, worked closely with them on the scene and was responsible for planning the attack. In this carefully planned attack, 28 innocent civilians lost their lives and more than 200 people were injured. This attack was one of two very similar attacks by the very same outfit, both in Argentina, the two most destructive and deadliest attacks against Jewish centers in the history of the Americas. Reading from stop910.com, the first was on the 17th of March, 1992, the explosion of a booby-trapped car in front of the Israeli embassy in Buenos Aires. The 18th of July, 1994, was the explosion of a booby-trapped truck in front of the AMIA Community Center building in Buenos Aires. I would add that that is a Jewish center. Former President and current Vice President Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner was implicated in open court in Argentina of involving herself with the Iranian-backed terrorist organizations that executed these two bombings. Madame Presidenta Cristina Fernandez is a close friend and ally of Hillary Clinton and Chilean ex-president Michelle Bachelet, the author of the modern migrant invasions of various South American countries, as well as the Texas border. As the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights from 2018 to 2022, thus the person responsible for UN refugee resettlement worldwide. Just understand that when you hear about Iran, Hezbollah, and Unit 910 in the news, this is not something that is happening in Asia or Asia Minor and coulda, woulda, maybe, possibly someday will have an effect in the United States. This is a well-established espionage and terrorist organization that's been heavily active in the Americas for three decades and has done extensive reconnaissance and target acquisition in the critical nation of Panama. South of Panama is Colombia, and the new president, Gustavo Petro, is tearing the nation apart even faster than his Bushite predecessor. Gustavo Petro, a former leftist guerrilla fighter himself, campaigned on a smooth change of tack to the left for Colombia. Instead, other leftist guerrilla factions are emboldened even more than before. Petro has zero intention of using Colombia's extensive U.S.-equipped military to close the southern entrance to the Darien Gap and Darien Jungle, leading to Panama instead normalizing relations with his eastern neighbor, Venezuela, and the broad swath of Iranian military present therein. The Biden administration canceled many sanctions against Venezuelan oil with laughable oversight and anti-corruption provisions, and the Chevron Corporation moved in to repair the dilapidated oil infrastructure in Venezuela. Today, American cars and trucks cruising down Route 66 are burning Venezuelan crude, the dirtiest in the world, and our pain at the pumps is funding an even dirtier government that's thick as thieves with Iran. Just a few years ago, Venezuela was really hurting from the Trump-era sanctions, their refinery infrastructure too broken down to even make gasoline from their own abundant oil. Who sent a lifeline to Venezuela? Iran, in two different flotillas of tankers filled with refined gasoline. They departed from Iranian ports, sailed the Straits of Hormuz, went around the Arabian Peninsula, through the Red Sea, Suez Canal, Mediterranean Sea, the Straits of Gibraltar, and sailed across the entire width of the Atlantic Ocean. Without being blocked or ignited by the U.S. military or a patriotic Venezuelan. Like what is now developing on a larger scale in Panama, the Maduro regime was largely supported by illegal mining when the sanctions were really hurting the nation and strangling his illegitimate government badly. The lion's share of that guerrilla-mined gold was taken out on Iranian military aircraft in order to skirt the sanctions. Of course, Venezuela's entered into a golden age. All those hard times are behind them. Now the Maduro regime is flush with cash that they can use to build up their military and oppress their population, rig elections, and consolidate control. And now what are they embarking on? A war of conquest. In December, laughably, the Venezuelans will vote on whether to invade the eastern region they call the Essequibo, where new oil fields have struck black gold on land and discovered significant natural gas deposits offshore. The referendum could not be more ironic. The slogan for it is "Vote five times yes." Venezuela and Colombia are the two southern dominoes collapsing into Panama. Here are the two above it. Costa Rica and Nicaragua both cover the entire width of the American Isthmus, so every migrant that goes through the Darien Gap into Panama then goes into Costa Rica and Nicaragua, making their way to the Texas border. The Economist wrote an article this week which is titled, "Costa Rica No Longer Seems a Latin American Success Story." The subtitle is, "Its State Services Are Crumbling and People Are Angry About It." Here, as in Panama, there is a constitutional issue. Reading from Economist.com, "Many shouted in favor at President Rodrigo Chavez for more money for education, which does not receive the 8% of GDP annually that the Constitution mandates." I would add here that the Costa Rican constitution is pacifist. They do not have a military. It is also the only nation in the Americas that officially has a state church, which is the Catholic Church. So where we see non-governmental organizations such as Catholic Charities operating by piracy in South Texas and under a concordat in Colombia, in Costa Rica, they have carte blanche. They are literally above the law. Like the tiny nation of Israel, Costa Rica's economy is heavily dependent upon tourism, an industry which has been crippled not only by wars but by the COVID pandemics and lockdowns before it. This brings us to the fifth domino, Nicaragua, where we actually find some good news. This nation has had struggles both internal and external, and parts of the capital city of Managua are still in ruins from the 1978-79 Civil War. This week, Managua will open their Central Plaza de Fe Park to the preaching of the gospel, probably the largest evangelistic preaching campaign since the Civil War. Where Colombia and Costa Rica have invited the Catholic Church to run certain aspects of their nation and government, Nicaragua has turned over a new leaf and expelled portions of that entity, even banning the Jesuit order and nationalizing their universities. The preaching of the gospel in Managua this week has the approval of the Nicaraguan government at the highest levels, and we can only hope and pray that God will bring prosperity and advancement to this nation that's suffered and been impoverished for so long. After the break, I'm going to play a clip by evangelist Britt Hancock, the unassuming country preacher who was personally discipled in the mountains of Mexico by miracle minister David Hogan. I'll let him tell you about it in his own words when we come back, and then we'll spin a Seeger tune for the Peli Roja. Someday, lady, you'll accompany me. Wanted, young, skinny, wiry fellows, not over 18, must be expert horsemen willing to risk death daily, orphans preferred. That was the text of the old Pony Express ad, pasted to signposts in St. Joseph, Missouri. Such were the pioneers that made our nation great, from sea to shining sea. Today, also, God is looking for a few good men. He's looking for a few pistol-packing mamas. And I invite you to be among that number, to support your local gunfighter, to help us to broadcast. I want to be your pastor, and I want to be your missionary. Send me a prayer request. Send me a letter. Send me a dollar. You can also do it online at gospelgunslingers.com. tell me your thoughts that you would like broadcast on the airwaves all the way to Antarctica. My mailing address is Pastor Sam Honnold, H-O-N-N-O-L-D, 7107 South Yale Avenue, number 434, Tulsa, Oklahoma, 74136, USA. Let's be brothers in arms. I covet your friendship. Let's be fellow soldiers struggling for our free hemisphere. I cannot be out here on the cutting edge without you. I'm a refugee. I have left all. I am on the front lines, and like the United States military, for every soldier out shooting his gun, even a soldier who's not elite, even a soldier who's not on the cutting edge, have 17 soldiers behind him, cooking, loading trucks, driving trucks, flying planes, fueling vehicles. The apostle writes of the support structure in the Lord's army when he says, "Who goeth a warfare any time at his own charges," in 1 Corinthians 9:7. The apostle is stating that the soldier on the front lines needs his brothers and sisters behind him. Would you do that for your brother Sam? Would you help me to stay on the air? Would you write out an envelope, write me a note, put in a few colones or quetzales, some Mexican or Argentine pesos or any of the pesos of the world, or send me some American dollars while they're still worth something? Someday, very soon, they won't be. But above all, I want your inscription. I want your enlistment. I want you to take up the sword. Take up the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God, and take up the sword. Uncle Sam and the Gospel Gunslingers want you. Orphans Preferred.
We went to Mexico to work with a guy named David Hogan years ago.
Wow.
To do pioneer church planting in the mountains of Mexico.
Now, this is in very rural areas where really the gospel is not even reached. God has used you in a mighty way. Just tell the people more. I know you've seen the dead raised. God has done such incredible things. Just share with us for a moment. Tell them what Jesus is doing around the world.
Yeah, it is pretty amazing. We've seen so many people come to know the Lord that have never had an opportunity to hear about him since the fall of man. We do work in small villages in Mexico, really everywhere we go. That's kind of our primary focus. But sometimes people knock on the door that are from cities or from other places, and we don't say no to them, you know. So we have a couple of city works starting in the city of Puebla in Mexico. But yeah, we've seen Jesus do amazing things. Every class of miracle you can find in the Bible is happening constantly in the work that he's given us, and it's pretty amazing. You know, probably I would say 80 or 90% of the people that we have saved have either themselves or someone in their family had some kind of power encounter with God, some miracle or something.
What a mighty God we serve.
Gypsy wind is blowing warm tonight. The sky is starlit and the time is right. And still you're telling me you have to go. Before you leave, there's something you should know. Yeah, something you should know, babe. I've seen you smiling in the summer sun. I've seen your long hair flying when you run. I've made my mind up that it's meant to be. Someday, lady, you'll accompany me. Someday, lady, you'll accompany me. I'm where the rivers meet the sound and sea. With fire, but you lose the flame. You
ashes smolder, but the warmth soon gone. You end up cold and lonely on your own. I'll take my chances, babe, I'll risk it all. I'll win your love, or I'll take the fall. I've made my mind up, girl, it's meant to be. Someday, lady, you'll accompany me. Someday, lady, you'll accompany me. It's written down somewhere, it's got to be. High above me, flying wild and free. Oh, but someday, lady, you'll accompany me. Someday, lady.
If you're a regular listener to Living by the Sword, you probably figured out that we do joke around and we have a lot of fun, but the main purpose of this show is for me to testify of the things that the Lord has done and to prophesy. We both interpret the scripture and declare the things to come. We wield the weapons of our warfare mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds. Like the Israeli bombing campaign, only more so, these weapons can be wholesale and indiscriminate and cause great collateral damage when a Christian work or a city or a nation or even our own nation incurs the wrath of God and must be anathematized by the Lord's watchman. We've spoken in recent weeks about the division of nations in the current snowballing global war. For example, how Iran is very divided and how there are numerous sects within Islam around the world. Well, here's what just happened. This is the headline from HalTurnerRadioShow.com. Terrorists blow up Pakistan airbase, 40 fighter jets burning. I'll just read this and then comment. The Taliban-linked terrorist group Tehrik-e-Jihad, TTP, has just claimed responsibility for a significant attack tonight on Mianwali Air Base in northern Pakistan. The terrorist group appears to have snuck into the base using ladders and are claiming to have destroyed several aircraft as well as some kind of armored vehicle. The Pakistani army is currently conducting an operation to secure the base and have already killed multiple terrorists. I comment that the whole purpose of the sandbox wars and the trillions of dollars spent in fighting them, not to mention the lives, were all purposed to eliminate this very type of infighting between sects of Islam, and thereby accomplish for the Pope Daniel 11:6, the adjoining together of the King of the North, the Roman kingdoms of the world, and the King of the South, the pan-Islamic empires of the world, to accomplish the wet dream of apostate apostle Rick Warren, that reprehensible reprobate and architect of the one world religion, Chrislam, the combination of Catholic/Orthodox Antichrist so-called Christianity, with what's left of the Islamic world after the trillions of dollars in the sandbox wars. This is Chrislam. This is the one world super religion of the end time. And what do these two kissing cousins have in common? They both hate the Jews. Even as the fourth and terrible beast rises out of the sea, it is partly strong and partly broken or brittle. The 10 kings of Revelation reign for 1 hour with the beast. Yet they hate the whore and burn her with fire. Three horns are torn out for the little horn to rise. The infighting continues until the end, and the infighting continues today. We spoke last week about the rivalry between neighbors India, Pakistan, and China. But Pakistan has another enemy, their close cousin, Afghanistan. Charlie Wilson's war, so named after Manchurian candidate Texas Congressman Charlie Wilson, was an invasion of Afghanistan from Pakistan, done by my former associate and personal enemy Milton Alexander Bearden. Milton's original weapons shipments and his early meetings with the famed warlords of Afghanistan, such as the Lion of the Panjshir and others, were done in Pakistan. Later forays into Afghanistan were based in Pakistan, and it really caused a lot of bad blood between those nations and their rival sects of Islam. Bad blood which is far from satisfied, as evidenced by the fact that Taliban fighters came across the border and made this destructive sapper attack, destroying 40 irreplaceable aircraft, which would be necessary for a Pakistani nuclear attack on their rival India, on Israel, or on any of the myriad of U.S. bases within the regional theater. The Bible promises in Hebrews 12 that God will in the last days shake all things that can be shaken. Clearly, the hand of God is able to make the physical earth shake. Now we see the alliances shaken, and the national alignments shaken. Soon we'll see the heavens shaken also, and the stars in their courses will fall to the earth. Fear not, little flock, it is the Father's pleasure to give you the kingdom. As we're discussing the ethereal, I'm going to throw out one more thing that I cannot prove. There is a rumor going around about the Syed Nasrallah speech, the head of Hezbollah's speech in Beirut, Lebanon, Friday morning, before a live audience of not less than 100,000 dedicated jihadis. Nasrallah did his share of boasting and saber-rattling, but stopped short of declaring war on Israel. I watched the speech live on Al Jazeera, but there was virtually no sound aside from the English language translator. Here's the rumor that popped up on Telegram, that while Nasrallah was in the middle of his speech before the live audience, a pair of British jets made a supersonic overflight of Beirut. This is very interesting if it in fact happened. I have been unable thus far to nail down an eyewitness to the events, and there are many reasons for the Islamic observers to deny that it occurred. If it did in fact happen, this would be a terrifying reminder that Western powers were able to reach out and touch those troublemakers right in the midst of their event, in their own capital city, in the midst of the fiercest anti-access area denial sphere of anti-aircraft artillery west of Moscow. Multiple layered radars and anti-aircraft batteries, both of Iranian origin, and Russian systems to protect the Russian air and naval facilities right there around Beirut, would have to be defeated in an air assault of Beirut or Damascus. An Israeli assault would expect a degree of attrition and would probably have a wild weasel opening wave. To make an overflight of Beirut without a massive aviation battle would require stealth technology capable of fooling the radars of both those advanced nations. The King of Israel famously said in the Bible, "He who puts on his armor should not boast as he who takes it off." Before a conflict, everybody brags about their weapons, their techniques, their soldiers, what they're going to do to their enemy and how they're going to do it. Real battle tests all that. We will soon find out whether the aircraft carrier is obsolete. Suffice it to say that if this supersonic overflight happened and struck terror into the hearts of Hezbollah, it was the F-35 that did it, and its stealth technology fooled the smartest radars in the theater. This could only be done by the F-35 with weapons in internal bays. Or maybe it couldn't be done at all. After all, it's only a rumor. As the world moves into a new eon, a new epoch, I'll play you my favorite Seeger hit of all time. Here's Turn the Page by Bob Seeger and the Silver Bullet Band.
On a long and lonesome highway east of Omaha, you can listen to the engine moaning out his one-note song. You can think about the woman
or the girl you knew the night before. But your thoughts will soon be wandering the way they always do when you're riding 16 hours and there's nothing much to do. And you don't feel much like riding, you just wish the trip was through. See, here I am on the road again. There I am up on the stage. Here I go playing star again. There I go, turn the page. Well, you walk into a restaurant, strung out from the road, and you feel the eyes upon you as you're shaking off the cold. You pretend it doesn't bother you, but you just want to explode. Most times you can't hear them talk, other times you can. All the same old cliches. Is that a woman or a man? And you always seem outnumbered. You don't dare make a stand. Here I am on the road again. There I am up on the stage. Here I go playing star again. There I go, turn the page. Out there in the spotlight, you're a million miles away. Every ounce of energy you try to give away. As the sweat pours out your body like the music that you play. Later in the evening, as you lie awake in bed, with the echoes from the amplifiers ringing in your head, you smoke the day's last cigarette, remembering what she said. Ah, here I am on the road again. There I am up on the stage. Here I go playing star again. There I go.
You know what Seeger's singing about. You know what's east of Omaha? My people. Iowa, Illinois, Wisconsin, and then Michigan. Seeger's own Michigan. So he walks into a diner. Heck, maybe the famous Iowa 80 truck stop in Walcott, Iowa, right outside of the Quad Cities. And the country boys start making fun of him under their breath. Same old cliches. Is that a woman or a man? Now, they made fun of him because he was long hair back in the early days, rocking since the 60s. But today, people make fun of us preachers for being prudes since we don't believe in fornication and playing the field. They say we're all gay. Same old cliches. Is that a woman or a man? Every ounce of energy you try to give away. You know who that reminds me of? Evangelist Nathan Morris, which is the Britisher voice that you heard earlier in the interview with Pastor Brett Hancock. Evangelist Nathan is really growing on me. He does the face-to-face television program interviewing revivalists and worship leaders.
it will probably be him opening the campaign in Managua alongside his fellow evangelist and longtime translator Mauricio Canales. Evangelist Morris came out of the Brownsville and later the Bay Area revival in Alabama. He was mentored by Steve Hill and, to a lesser extent, Pastor John Kilpatrick. These three slogged through the mud for years, searching for revival while still mired in the quicksand of the Assemblies of God. I asked a friend of mine about that, who, like Vinny from My Science Project, remembers everything he ever saw on television. And here's what he said. Ignited Church is the Assemblies of God. God TV is the Assemblies of God. Paul and Jan Crouch at TBN were Assemblies of God. Jimmy Swagger was Assemblies of God. Jim Baker, too. Of course, I'd comment that Jim Baker wrote the book I Was Wrong, The Tell-All, how he and others invented the prosperity gospel to get rich and to pervert the gospel for filthy lucre. He repented and God started to do a new thing. Paul and Jan Crouch, when they finally died, all their adulteries and alcoholism came to light, and it also became known that their empire was worth well over $1 billion. The apostle told me years ago, when Jimmy Swagger was long washed up, that was the most powerful anointing I've ever felt. The man who told me that later ran off with his wife's best friend and was revealed as a serial adulterer and fled the nation rather than spend 6 years in prison, the penalty for adultery in Mexico even today. It was God TV that brought fornication and licentiousness into IHOP Kansas City, for which that great work has been this week in a cascading cataclysm, and the ruin of that house was great. Evangelist Morris shot to fame when God TV televised his prayer for Delia Knox, who was supernaturally healed after 22 and a half years in a wheelchair. But I believe and I perceive that the evangelist is long done with the leaven of God TV and the Assemblies of God, that he's out of the mire, that he's thrown off all the things that hinder, that he'll run the race set before him and go to a new level to shake the nations. I'm going to play one last tune by Bob Seger. It's about the shameful misbehavior of our youth, and we all did it. Evangelist Morris did it. I did it. The Peli Roja did it. We're done with all that now. Also, Seeger states in this tune, we were living by the sword. For that, I almost played it for you on my very first show. I refrained at the time, but here we are 60 shows later, and I'm going to spin it for you. God bless you all. Send me a note. Send me a prayer request. Y vamos a Managua.
Too tall, could have used a few pounds. Tight pants, points, hollering out. She was a black-haired beauty with big dark eyes and points all her own, sitting way up high, way up firm and high. Out past the cornfields when the woods got heavy, out in the back seat of my 60 Chevy, working on mysteries without any clues, working on our night moves, trying to make some front page driving news, working on our night moves in the summertime. Some pie in the sky song. We were just young and restless and bored, living by the sword. And we'd steal away every chance we could, to the back room, to the alley, or the trusty woods. I used her, she used me, but neither one cared. We were getting our share, working on our night moves, trying to lose the awkward teenage blues, working on our night moves. Mm-hmm. And it was summertime. Mm-hmm. Sweet summertime, summertime. Oh,
felt the lightning. Yeah, waited on the thunder. Waited on the thunder. I woke last night to the sound of thunder. How far off I sat and wondered. Started humming a song from 1962. Ain't it funny how the night moves when you just don't seem to have as much to lose. Strange how the night moves with autumn closing in.
Circuit riding preacher used to ride across the land with a rifle on his saddle and a Bible in his hand. He told the prairie people all about the promised land as he went riding, singing down the trail.
This has been the Living by the Sword radio program with Pastor Samuel Honnold, GospelGunslingers.com.
The circuit riding preacher used to ride across the land with a rifle on his saddle and a Bible in his hand. He told the prairie people all about the promised land as he went riding, singing down the trail.